Hi, I'm Jonathan, and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast, where we discuss, debate, debunk, and deconstruct. What's that noise? Where is that coming from?
Oh, it's just me. I'm just hauling in my latest purchase from eBay.
That box is, like, huge. What do you get from eBay nowadays?
Well, you can find anything on eBay, Jonathan.
Okay, it's pretty large looking, and... It's like a door.
It's an armoire, Jonathan. Haven't you ever seen one of those before?
I haven't had the pleasure.
Yeah, it's like a wardrobe, only it stands on four legs.
So what do you plan on putting in this thing, anyways?
Oh, all sorts of stuff. My clothes, you know. It's nice and roomy in here.
Whoa. Wait, I feel like a draft. But that can't be possible. It's just a little thing.
Wow,
no way.
It's huge. Wait, where's the back of this thing? It's huge.
Wait, what? There's like a big... Wait, where are we?
I don't know, but you're stepping on my foot.
Sorry about that. Wait. What are you guys doing down here? Where exactly is here?
Why is the Utilidors, of course? You know, the big tunnel underneath the
Magic Kingdom? Yeah. Okay, I know what the Utilidors is, but... What exactly are you doing in the Utilidors?
Well, where do you think I get all my insider information from?
I knew this place didn't look very much like Narnia.
Wait, but we're supposed to be doing a podcast. We better get out of here.
Sorry about that, folks. We seem to have had some technical difficulties. Getting on with the podcast, let's start things normal with Rachel with the news.
Disneyland has installed a meet-and-greet location with the White Witch from the Chronicles of Narnia, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in Fantasyland near Sleeping Beauty Castle. On December 14th, Disneyland launched Ears to the World, Disney's show translator. This innovative system allows guests to hear the audio of the attraction in either Spanish or Japanese. Currently, the service is offered at Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, Muppet Vision 3D, and It's Tough to Be Above. At Epcot, a new tip board has been placed near Interventions East, showing guests not only approximate wait times, but the available FastPass return times as well. Also at Epcot, the Wonders of Life will open for the holiday season. This attraction has long been rumored for closure, so this could be the last time this pavilion... Also at Epcot, the Wonders of Life will open for the holiday season. This attraction has long been rumored for closure, so this could be the last time this pavilion is open. The Making of Me movie will not be open. The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe opened at number 1 with $67.1 million. This makes it the highest Disney opening for a non-Pixar movie. The movie also claimed the top spot of British box office with the biggest ever opening weekend for a Disney film. Last Tuesday, Disney released Kronk's New Groove. The film was nominated for an Annie Award, and LaughingPlace.com's resident critic, Herbie Holt, gave it an A-. The nominations for the Golden Globes has been announced. The Chronicles of Narnia received nominations for Motion Picture, Best Original Score, and Best Original Song, while ABC Productions' Commander-in-Chief, Lost, Grey's Anatomy, and Desperate Housewives all received nominations for Best Television Series. Altogether, Disney received 18 nominations. The Walt Disney Company is rumored to have plans for the McDonald's Happy Meal toys to be replaced with portable media players that could hold Disney movies, music, games, or photos.
Today's trivia question is, what is the name of the spirit of 3D from Muppet Vision 3D? The answer is coming up.
Now it's time for Armchair Imagineering, where we formulate ideas to be used at all of the different Disney theme parks. This week, we're going to be talking about the People Mover track at Disneyland's Tomorrowland.
So let's start off with a voicemail.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Paul Berry from the WindowToTheMagic.com podcast, and I was calling in response to your statement that you wanted people to call in about the People Mover track at Disneyland, and you were looking for suggestions as to what they should do. My particular preference would be that they put the thing back in exactly as it was in 1967. I know that's hardcore, but I think that would be the thing that would make me most happy. Again, this is Paul from the WindowToTheMagic.com podcast, and thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Paul. As somebody who never actually had the chance to ride the People Mover at Disneyland, I really think that would be a great option.
Well, one of the questions is, I'm not sure, do you know if the company that originally built the People Mover is still around? Because I'm not sure if they could get the, like, you know, the parts or anything anymore.
Well, I don't think that it was Imagineering that built that ride system. But I don't think that even if they were to rebuild it, they would use the same ride system. Most likely they would use a more modern version of an Omnimover type attraction than what they did originally in 1967.
More like the Magic Kingdom version, I would assume.
Well, they can't use the magnets, the LAMs, I believe. I always get confused LAMs and LSMs, but LAMs, I think, is what they use at the Magic Kingdom. And those only work on a level surface. So you can't use them at Disneyland because it doesn't always stay level.
All right.
Two, how much retrofitting would that require? I mean, I'm not sure what with the rocket rods and everything. I mean, I'm not sure how much of a nightmare it would be even trying to retrofit the track to allow a People Mover attraction to operate there.
Well, there's a lot of complications in restoring the People Mover. First of all, the whole platform was changed for rocket rods. There isn't an entrance anymore. They'd have to rebuild that. They took away the speed ramp. And then there's been rumored structural damage. It's a tough question because it really can't be used for anything else but some sort of transportation type device. So it's either going to have to stay dormant, which is really bad show in my opinion, or you have to spend a lot of money for essentially an A-ticket. So it is a tough question. What would you do in that situation?
Well, maybe, this is kind of strange, but what if you just turn it into a walkway, basically, a covered walkway, you know, shade, and maybe even put some, you know, little exhibits. Perhaps, I don't know.
Well, I believe Tomorrowland 2055, which was one of the proposed makers for Tomorrowland, actually did envelop a two-story idea. That was one of the ideas in it. So a two-story Tomorrowland has been around before. I mean, the way it is now, it wouldn't really be possible, but...
Well, it'd be also kind of silly. I mean,
yeah.
I'm kind of grasping at straws.
It would kind of ruin the skyline, that's for sure.
Is it a possibility to add a Fantasyland station and truly turn it into a transportation device?
Yeah, I think that's somewhat at the crux of what they should do. I think that if I was in their shoes, what I most likely would do is figure out a way. I mean, they could maybe even turn that into something that would go away from Tomorrowland and maybe even over to DCA if they wanted to and truly turn it into a transportation system if they wanted to. But even like Megan said, and just use a Fantasyland station, I think using it actually as a legitimate transportation device would be a good way to use it.
The theming contrast would be kind of strange, though.
Well, I mean, I guess, but on the other hand, does the old-fashioned train really fit into Tomorrowland?
Another thing is that people do seem to miss the old Skyway buckets, and this would partially accommodate for the lack of the Skyway by providing a mode of transportation.
Yeah, and if it does actually let you off at the hub of Tomorrowland, then it's not too bad for a transportation device. I mean, it doesn't exactly take you really far, but if it's like the old People Mover in terms of consistently running, then the capacity would make it a very viable transportation system. And honestly, probably the first viable Disney transportation system. Well, that wraps up our Armchair Imagineering discussion for this week. Next week, we're deciding to mix things up a little bit, and instead of doing an Armchair Imagineering segment, we're going to do a showdown. And we pit the same attraction, but we compare the different versions from coast to coast and even internationally. Now, none of us here have had the option of going to the international destination, so we'd love to hear comments from people who have had that chance. So our first showdown will be the Haunted Mansion.
So you can send us voicemails at 1-866-327-5072. Please remember, if you're under 18, that you must have your parents' permission to call. Or you can also email us at podcast@laughingplace.com. You can also post in the laughingplace.com discussion boards. We will surf it and include any of your comments.
So obviously the big news for this week has been the Chronicles of Narnia. So, what'd you guys think of the movie?
Well, as a big fan of the Chronicles of Narnia book series, I thought it was really a fantastic adaptation of the book. It actually stuck a lot more closely to the book than I was expecting it to, and I thought they cast an amazing Lucy. I also liked Mr. Tumnus and the White Witch. I also thought the special effects were great. My only concern was that they over-dramatized quite a few of the scenes. The scene with the ice float is ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. My only, it's more of a nitpick than really a complaint, is that some of the scenes are a little bit too Lord of the Ringsy for the story, which I think is a little more simple, and the end battle scenes were a little bit over the top, I thought, for a family movie.
Actually, visually, you can really tell that they were really using the Lord of the Rings series as a model. Remember the scene with St. Nicholas and them hiding underneath the road? That's visually exactly like a scene in the Fellowship of the Ring.
The ring race and everything, yeah.
Yeah, very much taking a cue from Peter Jackson there. But what was nice about the movie was that everybody was going into it knowing that they were, in a sense, cashing in on this genre, but they did make it their own. I felt visually it was, I liked it better than the Lord of the Rings films. It wasn't as dark looking, and the special effects I thought were just incredible.
Yeah, that was, the thing for me definitely was the special effects, because I'm really into just everything special effects. I wasn't exactly expecting to like the movie as much as I did, just because I'm not exactly a big fan of the fantasy genre, but the special effects were very, very cool. Particularly Aslan, he was very realistic without drawing you out of the fact that, I mean, he's a talking lion. I mean, you're not going to come across a talking lion, yet he looked believable. It's amazing.
Yeah, and the beavers too, just, it was incredible special effects. I like the fact that it was a fantasy that I could lose myself in and really believe in, and you do believe they were talking to beavers. It didn't occur to you that it wasn't possible that they could be talking to beavers.
It's definitely a mark of good special effects, where it doesn't really pull you away from the film, even though it's completely ridiculous. I mean, talking beavers, talking lions, goat people and things, but yet, you could believe it all. It was very good. I was very impressed.
I just also wanted to say that I really agree with the poster Elder P on the Laughing Place discussion boards. He mentioned that he was really looking forward to seeing Prince Caspian. And I'm really looking forward to see what they do with the other books in this series. I'm actually curious to see what order they'll be doing them in, since what's tricky with this is that every book in the series has a different set of main characters. For the most part, there are some repeated characters, but there are also books that have practically none of the main characters of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in them. So it'll be an interesting challenge from that point of view. So essentially taking a totally different formula, as it were, and using it and trying to make a success out of it.
Well, in watching the movie, the one thing that occurred to me is, what exactly is Turkish Delight? So I've just looked it up on the internet, and it is sugar, cornstarch, water, and flavoring. And the suggestions they use are rose, strawberry, orange, or lemon. So there you go, folks. That's what Turkish Delight was, in case you're wondering.
Gooey syrup.
Basically, yeah. Sounds very sugary.
In other recent releases, Kevin Yee's book, 101 Things You Never Knew About Walt Disney World, was just released for the first time this week. Daniel and I were actually both lucky enough to be able to read it by this time, so we just wanted to discuss the book and what we thought of it.
Well, first of all, it is nice to have a book about Walt Disney World trivia, because a lot more people are diehard fans of Disneyland, and I'm a big diehard fan of Disneyland, and I've read every book on Disneyland. But it is nice to see a trivia-focused book on Disney World. You don't see too many of those.
Especially as somebody who grew up near Walt Disney World rather than Disneyland, I was excited to see something that I can actually explore here. I've actually got my list
as a result of the book, of places I need to go and things I need to see. The great thing about 101 Things You Never Knew About Walt Disney World is it's not just generic Walt Disney World trivia. Some of it actually goes quite in depth. And I'd personally say that I'm somebody who knows a lot about Walt Disney World, yet I still found quite a few items in the book that I didn't know, which was exciting.
There is a lot of information crammed in that book, because it isn't just 101 things listed. They actually do go into big details in the descriptions. That actually has a lot of the information. So it turns out giving you a lot of tidbits and interesting facts about the parks. The only unfortunate thing about it is there are a few mistakes that we found within it, understandable for an unofficial effort. One thing that we noticed was that it was talking about the plane that's used at the Great Movie Ride, that many people say that was used in Casablanca, which the book thankfully says it was not, because it wasn't. Read the book to find out the full story about it. But it says that the back half of the plane is between the elephants and the African savanna at the Jungle Cruise, and really that's not a good description of where it is. So it's just a minor thing. There's a few other minor little things like that in the book. So that's the only complaint, if it is a complaint, more like a nitpick.
Yeah, I would just like to add that they are pretty minor and don't really detract from the book all that much. It's just minor, nitpicky. People like us would notice them. But if you're interested, it can be purchased at LaughingPlace.com store, along with Kevin Yu's other books, Magic Wisdom and 101 Things You Never Knew About Disneyland, both of which I have read and highly recommend.
And hey, if you did notice those nitpicks, welcome to our club. We'll send you a cookie if we could only afford to. And now I'd like to play the conclusion of my interview with Margaret Carey, the original reference model for Tinkerbell.
Well, now with the popularity, obviously, there's Tinkerbell pajamas, Tinkerbell shoes, Tinkerbell everything. Is there any Tinkerbell merchandise that you've seen that kind of make you shake your head, or you're kind of like, I don't know about that?
Let me go the other way. There are such beautiful things. I love it that Walt Disney and Roy Disney made it possible that there are artists all over the world who are working night and day to turn out beautiful things that people can own. I mean, when I was a little girl, there was no Disneyland. There was Walt Disney, and then I finally got to see Snow White, and he persuaded me with that movie that there was a special place that I knew existed, but I didn't know until I saw Snow White. So I grew up with Disneyland, and I yearned to own some of these things, and there was no place. And yet now, people just sort of take it for granted that they can walk in and they can get buy this, buy that, the other, and such beautiful things. Terry Harden, for example, who did that sculpture of Tinkerbell walking across the map, getting away from Captain Hook and showing where Peter. It is the most beautiful, cunning little thing you could imagine. I signed a lot of them for people, and I'm so glad that they have it. Yes, some of the things, I think it's unavoidable that you would say, well, maybe not, but even those things give joy to people. You just remember that Tinkerbell, let me tell you a quick story. I have and this is on my website, by the way, that just went up last week. It's called TinkerbellTalks.com. And that's going to be the name of my book if it ever gets done. But on TinkerbellTalks.com, one of the things that I wrote about one of the pictures was I was signing autographs at the National Fantasy Fan Club table. And this lady came up to me, very nice-looking lady. My guess would be about 38, and with short, black, curly hair, and she was shaking. And I said, what is the matter? And she said, you saved my life. You and Tinkerbell saved my life. I never thought I'd be able to say thank you. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, I've really got a wild one here. Well, she told the story that she weighed over 300 pounds and was in a wheelchair just about 3 years before, and both of her knees had to be replaced. And she was so depressed, but she said, who thinks happy thoughts? And she said, Tinkerbell. And she had that tiny Tinkerbell tattooed on her ankle, the one where Tink is on her tummy with her little feet in the air. And she said, every time I thought unhappy thoughts, I would look at Tink and say, nope, only happy thoughts. And I thought, this woman who looked great, her daughter stepped out from behind her and handed me a photo of her. and said, yes, this is the way that she looked, and Tinkerbell brought her through. Now, to me, I kept thinking, Mark Davis, what you have done, Jerry Geronimi, Wilfred Jackson, and me, of course. You saved this one woman's life. I mean, that, and there are many stories that I have beyond that, but this one I wrote up for the website because I thought it was so, and I keep in touch with her. Yes, I do. And so I just think that the things that you can get and that the artists make are so gorgeous. I can't do that, you know. I can do Tink, but I cannot make a statue and I can't draw. So I just stand back in amazement and just love the fact that it was Roy and Walt that caused all of this to happen and that you could own some of it yourself, some of the magic.
One interesting development in Tinkerbell history, as it were, is now in the Disneyland's 50th anniversary parade, they actually do have a live actress playing Tinkerbell in the parade, and I believe it's one of the, I know they did it at first when the park opened, but it's been a while. So how do you feel essentially about somebody impersonating you, as it were? It must be interesting.
I don't know. I get this strange feeling, of course, when I'm 5'2", and I'm a little older than Tink. And when parents bring their children up to the table and, you know, they say, that's Tinkerbell. You know, wow. And the kids look at me like, she's too tall to be Tinkerbell. And then I try to explain it to them, and I show them the picture, and some of them get it. But I think it's a disappointment to them because the children were expecting to see this little sprite. And I'm suspecting, and I haven't seen that parade, so although I live in Glendale, right outside, about a mile and a half away from Disney Studios, I have not seen that parade. I'm suspecting that maybe it might have been better if they had had something clever like a projected image of Tinkerbell alongside something that was going on, so she was the right size. I'm sure that the lady who does it does a really good job. But I don't think of Tinkerbell ever touching the ground. You know, she's always sort of just a little bit above the ground. And, of course, the lady who's doing it has to walk in ballet shoes and along the ground and smile and do all of the things. So maybe a tiny bit of the magic is missing from that. I really don't know.
So in conclusion, what do you think, over the course of the years, has made Tinkerbell such an accessible and beloved character for everybody? I mean, is it really possible to sum it up?
Oh, I think so. And let's start from the fact that Disney, before Tinkerbell, had no curvy females, unless, of course, you call the wicked stepmother in Snow White. There's some people like that. And all of their females, bless their hearts, were all victims. You know, they were just pushed around, and it was circumstances that happened or a fairy godmother that came. Tinkerbell was her own woman, and they hadn't seen anything like that. And in 1953, women were not supposed to be like that. They started to change. And people remembered her as who she was, and of course when Mr. Disney had the good sense to open up his TV show with Tinkerbell, I give him great credit for that, people started to say, I like her sauciness. I like what she does. But the other thing that's interesting, as curvy as she is, Daniel, she is naive. She is not hormonally challenged. You know, it's just what's around the corner, what fun can we have next, what can we do? Now, she knows, and most females have gone through this when they're 10, 11, or 12. They know that there's something going on with them, but they don't know what, you know? And it isn't until they get a little bit later, it's, oh, I'm looking for boys. But even when she's jealous of Peter, she really doesn't quite understand why she is jealous. So she's very innocent at the same time. She is not sashaying around to catch the eye of any man. She's just who she is. And I think we all appreciate that because she's complex and she's simple at the same time, which is a lovely combination. And when I go over and talk to the people at Disney Studios, I say, please don't ever let her get buxom. Don't ever let her give the feeling that she's after a guy, because she's not. She doesn't quite understand that. Well, all of that is charming and lovely and very free. And on top of that, Daniel, she can fly. I mean, that is, we all want to do that, don't we? And then she goes through and she gives trust and pixie dust to everybody. And I give a little bit to you right now. And thank you for having me on on the air with you. And I just want to say that I think that Walt Disney World is just a wow place. I can't stop saying wow. And I thank Roy Disney and Walt Disney that it's here, because the odds against it being here are pretty great. But they did it just for us, and it's a gift.
Well, I think we should also thank the... I think we should also thank the NFFC for bringing you down here to Florida for Mouse Fest. And would you like to talk a little bit about NFFC for those uninitiated?
I would, because even the initiated listen to NFFC and they say, what in the world is that? It's the National Fantasy Fan Club. And folks, you should really, really know about it. They brought me here to the Mouse Fest. And so I got to meet all these people. They got to meet me. And if you belong to the National Fantasy Fan Club, this happens all throughout the year. You get newsletters. You find out what's going on where. You get the insiders. You get to meet a lot of the insiders that you wouldn't meet otherwise. You get special cruises that you can go, all sorts of things. I think Daniel, I'm pretty sure that it only costs $24 a year to join. So it's really a remarkable place, and I would suggest that everybody who really loves Disney wants to know all the inside little things. For example, I can tell you right now, did you know that Tinkerbell, when Mark Davis drew her, only had 7 points on the skirt of her costume? Never any more and never any less. Now, there's an insider piece of trivia, see, and that's because I belong to the National Fantasy Fan Club. So, folks, thank you for letting me tell people about it, because it's really a remarkable organization. And I would imagine it's the NFFC.org, but I think you can get it through the Laughing Place. Is that? Yes. There's a link on the Laughing Place. So, anyway, that's it. So, faith, trust, and pixie dust, and I'll talk to you all later. Bye.
The trivia question was, what is the name of the spirit of 3D from Muppet Vision 3D? The answer is Waldo.
Don't you just hate it when your nose runs?
I can start my old football team.
Today's top 10 list, which fits in perfectly with our theme of today,
I don't know.
Anyway, our top 10 list is about dance numbers. The top 10 dance numbers. So, let's start off with number 10. West of the Wide Missouri, from the one and only Genuine Original Family Band.
That's a very underrated movie, in my opinion, and a wonderful dance sequence. Absolutely fantastic.
Don't they start throwing torches in that one, too? They dance around with the torches?
You know, interestingly enough, I was at the Magic Kingdom's Big Thunder Mountain Railroad the other day, and I actually heard the music playing in the queue, and I suddenly was like, wait, that's West of the Wide Missouri!
Number 9, Topsy Turvy from the Disneyland show, Festival of Fools.
Quite possibly the best live show ever. 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 That number was fantastic, and the whole show was great. I miss it very much.
Excuse me, let me have a moment.
Number 8, Gaston from the Broadway version of Beauty and the Beast.
Another fun dance number. I love the clinking with the mugs thing. That was brilliant.
Number 7, the topsy-turvy step in time number from Light Magic.
And no, wait, you can stop emailing us. It's a great number. Light Magic was pretty well choreographed in its major number, which was Step in Time. And sure, it was only a show that you could see within a 5-foot viewing space, but if you're within that viewing space, it was good dancing.
Number 6, The Fox Chase from Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Now, this was Disney special effects at their finest. That scene still holds up today. You totally believe he's dancing with the leprechauns, I think.
Really fast dancing at the end, too. They're really good. Number 5, Portobello Road from Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
And man, is that ever a dance number. About a half hour later, it finally ends.
I love how now on the non-edited version, the number's like 24 minutes. Now that is a solid, long dance number.
And you get the whole world, like all these different types of dances. I mean, it's just everything in one package. Number 4, Step in Time from Mary Poppins.
Great, very good. I don't know what to say.
Step in Time, Step in Time, Step in Time, Step
in
Time.
Isn't it funny that Step in Time and Topsy-Turvy are both on this list twice? Maybe those songs just inspire good dancing.
Or maybe we're not very good at thinking of very original top 10 lists.
Touche.
Number 3, We Are Here to Change the World from Captain EO.
I love Captain EO. There's nothing like late 80s music video dance sequences, is there?
Woo! Don't ever do that again.
Number 2, Dancing with the Penguins from Mary Poppins.
Now, I really think that this is one of the most classic dance sequences in American movie history, much less Disney history.
It's amazing the animation that they were able to do, considering the penguins were somewhat limited in their motion, and they had to mimic Dick Van Dyke's routine. Classy stuff.
There's nothing like seeing Dick Van Dyke imitate a penguin, let me tell you.
What about a penguin imitating Dick Van Dyke?
Well, see, they don't have to pull down their pants and everything. Now, number 1. What you've been waiting for the last, I don't know, 2.5 minutes? Something like that. Anyway, number 1. Drum roll, please. Beauty and the Beast from, well, Beauty and the Beast.
While maybe not the most choreographically advanced number, this scene is memorable and wonderful. Well, that concludes another fun episode from Laughing Place Podcast.
I can go buy more items from eBay now.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. She was eyeing those used bed knobs the other day.
Anyways, we'd love to hear your comments about the show or anything we've discussed on the show. Feel free to call us toll-free at 1-866-327-5072 or email us at podcast@laughingplace.com. If you are under 18 years of age, please make sure you have your parents or guardians' permission before calling.
And remember, next week we have the showdown of the Haunted Mansion in all of its various forms, including Hong Kong Disneyland, even though it's not open yet. And now, Jonathan, with our last words.
Ohana means family, and family means nobody's behind is left or forgotten.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
See ya.